This is an old Buddhist teaching tale that tells of a zoo whose star attraction was a tiger, known for its ferocity. The people who went to the zoo loved all of the animals, but they came to see the tiger. So it was the tiger that kept the zoo afloat. Unfortunately, the tiger had lived a long, good life and eventually died. And the zookeepers weren't quite sure what to do because buying a new tiger would be very expensive. And they didn't have that much money. And they came up with what they thought was an ingenious solution. They took a zoo worker and they took the skin of the tiger and they put them together. And so every day a zoo worker sat in the tiger cage, in the tiger skin, and somehow no one noticed. And so it went on for several weeks, and everyone felt great about how everything was going, until one day the zoo worker sitting in the tiger skin, in the tiger cage, overheard two zoo guests debating with each other which animal at the zoo was actually most ferocious. Was it the tiger? Or was it perhaps the lion in the cage the next row over? Well, they debated and debated, and the crowd engaged in debate, and they called over one of the zookeepers, and they convinced the zookeeper that it would be a great idea to test the question by putting the lion and the tiger into the same cage to see what happened. Everyone felt great about that, except for the worker in the tiger skin, who felt like it was a pretty terrible idea. And cowered in the corner of the cage, watching as they brought over the lion, watching as they unlocked the cage door, watching as the lion prowled in, watching in absolute terror as the lion lunged at the tiger and got right up in his face. At which point, the zoo worker in the tiger suit heard a voice very quietly saying, "Don't worry, I'm just like you." So who are we in this story? Are we the one in the cage, terrified that the other is about to destroy us? Are we the spectators, excited by the possibility of violence? Are we the zoo owners, making a profit, cultivating a culture of fear? Or are we the lion who whispers, "I'm just like you"? There is no greater tool. There is no greater weapon that an empire can wield against a people that it wants to control than the ease with which we can be convinced to fear and therefore betray and abandon one another. Which means that in times of empire, such as this one, there is no more greater revolutionary act than to choose to look through pretense and into solidarity, to choose not division, but communion. This is a choice that we are all facing right now because we do live in a time of empire, and empire has been very busy indeed reaping the benefits of the division that it has been sowing. There are so many threats, we are told, that we need to stay on top of. We have learned to our surprise that Haitians are eating not only their pets, but our pets. We have heard that Venezuelan fishermen are actually narco-terrorists. We discovered that the Somali community has been defrauding the government, that women are feminizing everything and just ruining it for all of the people. The trans community, we have discovered, is the greatest domestic terrorist threat the country has ever faced, except, it turns out, peaceful protesters. For a country with, for better or worse, the strongest military in the world, we sure are afraid of a lot of people. So afraid that in addition to the traditional military, which has, by the way, the same budget as the militaries of the next seven countries combined, we are so afraid that in addition to the traditional military, we have had to pull money from housing and health care to create a whole extra paramilitary force in the form of ICE to keep us all safe. If women just went back to the kitchen, if trans people just went back to the closet, if non-white people went back to any place that wasn't here, we would be safe. We are assured, at least for now. It's hard to keep track. It's hard to quite make sense of the threat and what will keep us safe. But then it isn't about making sense. It's about fear. And it's about control. It's about insisting that division is, in fact, a moral virtue and a test. Do you despise the right people, and are you willing to express enough disgust? Are you afraid of enough people, or at least willing to name them as a threat? Are you willing to sacrifice the right people to protect your own? And for the benefit of empire, we are expected to move through life like islands, or perhaps more accurately, fortresses, safe behind thick walls that protect us from them. But what our friend the lion in that Buddhist teaching tale knew, and what so many of us as people of faith know, even if we are not yet able to embody it fully, is that refuting that mindset is a matter of survival. Physical, of course, but also equally, if not more to the point in this space, it is a matter of survival on the spiritual and emotional level. Because while we are told that it is a strength to know who the other is, and while it may actually make us feel safe for a moment, there is a poison pill hidden behind those protective walls that we build around ourselves and our loved ones, tucked in back there like a bomb or a virus. Every sturdy wall that we build thinking that we are keeping us safe is in fact nothing more than an invitation to disempowerment, despair, ultimately collective destruction. Disempowerment because behind those walls, we cannot and we will not build the collective power that we need to make the changes that we must if we are all to survive. Changes in how we care for the vulnerable, changes in how we relate to those currently on the margins, changes in how we are in relationship with the earth and its other creatures. Despair because hope in its most essential form is rooted in large part in simple curiosity about the unfolding path of the unknown. And every time we build a wall between us and them, we close off access to another one of those unfolding paths. And if we do it often enough, if we allow the erection of those walls to become a virtue, then we find ourselves in time in a box with little space to wonder, and therefore little space to hope. And it is important to name that the work of justice does demand that we reject certain beliefs and behaviors and actively advocate against them. And it's important to name the harm that has been done, not least of all by the church, by telling people, especially and most often the vulnerable among us, that to forgive and forget is the highest virtue, without attention to amends, without attention to accountability, without attention to necessary change. And all of us in our individual lives have to do discernment in every moment about whether the discomfort we are feeling is a reflection of true harm and true threat that has not been addressed or not. That is true. And it is also true that sometimes we distort the virtue of self-care and self-protection into a vice that isolates us, not only as individuals, but as ever-shrinking communities defined by two things, their purity and their despair. So how do we turn away from our evolution as communities of despair and instead reclaim our identities as communities of hope? It's simple, luckily enough, even if it isn't easy. We expand the circle of us. We allow ourselves to be refined by the fires of radical love. We step out from behind the walls of false protection that we have erected, and we move towards each other. We wash the film from our eyes, and we see before us the holiness that is embodied in every life. And there is no promise or even likelihood that it will be easy or comfortable or even pain-free. There's not even a guarantee that it will be successful, which is okay, which is fine, because we as people of faith are not in fact called to be successful. We are called to be faithful in walking this path laid out before us. And our insistence on being faithful will allow us to remain a people of hope instead of bouncing between optimism, which is a certainty that if we walk this path, we will end up where we want to go, and despair, which is a certainty that this path is the only path and it is leading us far from where we want to go. Remaining faithful allows us to remain a people of hope, understanding, as Rebecca Solnit says, that hope locates itself in the premises that we don't know what will happen, and that in the spaciousness of uncertainty is the room to act. When you recognize uncertainty, she goes on to say, you recognize that you may be able to influence the outcomes, you alone or you in concert with a few dozen or several million others. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable. And here is a gift. If we are faithful as we walk, the community we walk among is sure to grow. Grow in numbers, perhaps, but grow most importantly in depth of love, grow in depth of spirit, grow in depth of connection. And it is in that faithfulness, and it is in that growth, it is in that commitment to remaining a people of hope. That is where the promise of our collective future, not simply a future of survival, but a future in which all people, all life thrive. That is where that promise exists. Let me close with a blessing. It was written by Jan Richardson. It's actually a Pentecost blessing, and it's not Pentecost, but I like the blessing and it fits. So here is one thing you must understand, she writes. Here is one thing you must understand about this blessing. It is not for you alone. It is stubborn about this. Do not even try to lay hold of it if you are by yourself, thinking you can carry it on your own. To bear this blessing, you must first take yourself to a place where everyone does not look like you or think like you, a place where they do not believe precisely as you believe, where their thoughts and ideas and gestures are not exact echoes of your own. Bring your sorrow. Bring your grief. Bring your fear, your weariness, your pain, your disgust at how broken the world is, how fractured, how fragmented by its wars, its hungers, its penchant for power, its ceaseless repetition of the history it refuses to rise above. I will not tell you this blessing will fix all of that. But in the place where you have gathered, wait. Watch. Listen. Lay aside your inability to be surprised, your resistance to what you do not understand. See then whether this blessing turns to flame on your tongue, sets you to speaking what you cannot fathom, or opens your ears to a language beyond your imagining that comes from a knowing in your bones, a clarity in your heart that tells you this is the reason we were made. For this ache that finally opens us, for this struggle, this grace that scorches us towards one another and into the blazing day. May it be so for all of us on this day and the days to come. Amen. Blessed be.